All right. So, hi, everyone. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Tiffany and I give our all to this podcast with curating information, researching platforms, and creating a show with the best up-to-date information that we can. We have a vested interest in the growth and health of your business, and we hope you feel the same way about us. And in saying that, we have started a Patreon page. We are still working out the details of what we'll be able to offer to you. And once we do, we will obviously share that with you. And we're hoping that we can make it something that is both affordable and something that you would really enjoy. And in saying that, we'd like to welcome you to the Business Behind Business, the Small Business Podcast. All right. So before we begin, Tiffany, we're going to be doing things a little differently today. You might not be able to tell, but we are all in the same building, but we are recording separately here at Intelligent Offices in Tyson's Corner, and we have a special guest. It's always great being here together, and we'd love to hear from you on whether we should continue our shows like this, or if you prefer to see us in our lovely home offices,
our natural environments.
Yes, yes. But before we get into what the details are of today's show, Tiffany, I wanted to talk to you a little about what your thoughts were on the event that we went to yesterday. It was really eye-opening, and I'm bringing it up because I want our listeners to know that part of our investment in research and helping bring out the best up-to-date information that we can for our small businesses is going to local events. And yesterday's was given by the Tyson's Regional Chamber of Commerce. And, you know, Tiffany, do you want to share a little more about what your thoughts were?
Yeah. It was, it was hosted by Tyson's Regional Chamber of Commerce, and it was at Seasons 52 in the Tyson's Mall. And mm-hmm. it was a great setting. It was intimate, which, you know, I think I loved like the intimate setting kind of networking group, because I feel like you get so much more one-on-one time. And so a lot of the networking happened, but the real gem of the event was really a lot of the information that was being shared.
Oh my gosh.
So we had a few really heavy hitters on the panels, like three panelists. Mm-hmm. And it was literally, I felt like it was talking about money from just different angles. Mm-hmm. People who give money to businesses, but they give it from different places. So mm-hmm. we had somebody who, of course, is with a regional bank, I believe, right? That was mm-hmm. on the panel. Somebody who has, you know, who holds like a CFO position and also does a lot of venture capitalist funding. Mm-hmm. And then one of the panelists also had like a private fund and just also has invested in a lot of different businesses over time and over a long period of time as well. Mm-hmm. So, although I think that might have been one of his caveats. He's like, do not invest in the business for more than 15 years. Like, you know, it's great for the return, but like the IRR at the end of the day is just terrible, right, at that point. So I thought it was great. And they were so open about all their experience, especially the ones that didn't go well. That's one of the one I really liked was the stories of where it just didn't work out and it was terrible and they lost money, and they were so upfront and really unabashed by the fact that they mm-hmm. made a mistake, and some of it's even a recent mistake. Like, look, we did our best, we tried, didn't work out, right? And so mm-hmm. I thought that made the whole concept of money and funding really approachable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciated how much they shared about how all the ways in which it wouldn't work or didn't work. And it really helped for me because I am in the position right now where I have a couple of clients who are either looking to sell, merge, and some that are looking to invest. And their approach isn't something that I really feel comfortable talking too, because I don't feel like I'm intelligent enough in that field. But after yesterday, I had a lot of great notes. Now I have people that I can connect them to, and also give them some direction within the boundaries of what I can give them. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for me to connect, and then they connect, and then they connect, which is, you know, what we're all here for, right? Is for the health of our ecosystem, our small business ecosystem. So,
yes. And I think one thing that's great lead into what we're talking about today is, I don't know if you heard that part, but from all three of them, They all said the number one mistakes when business owners approach them for any kind of investment is they're wholly unprepared to answer questions that oftentimes you probably have to answer when you think about your business plan, right? Whether you formally document it or not, but just even very entry level kind of ideas of, you know, who's your customer and why does somebody want to buy what you're selling?
Right? Yep.
And they say that oftentimes that's the question that most entrepreneurs fall down on because they're so in love with what they created that they've completely not considered on a customer's point of view if this is something they even want to buy or care enough to actually pay for.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it was a fantastic event to have gone to and then record today about business plans. Should you have one from the beginning? Why? What goes into a business plan? And we're hoping to find the answer. But before we get started, we encourage you to reach out to us if you would like to be a curator for a day on our Twitter or our Instagram. This is an option, or this is going to be an option on our Patreon page. And it's a great opportunity to share your business and your own knowledge with our community. We're also planning an event in May that will take place here in the Northern Virginia area. We plan to have speakers, a panel, there will be some networking and some more details we will share as we come closer to the date. If you would like to contribute, if you'd like to be a sponsor or a speaker, please contact us at the email address, thebusinessbehindsmallbusiness@gmail.com. Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website and should be referred to before and or after our podcast.
Okay, so I get to start with introducing our guest today, Dr. Michael Mort. Now, hopefully nothing I say is a surprise to you, but I guess we'll see. Here's the real test. Did my homework or not?
Yeah.
So, Michael, you started by studying mathematics at Michigan State University and the University of Minnesota, and eventually you got a PhD in electrical engineering. You went on to actually start a software company, ran it for 9 years before selling it to a public company. And I guess as most people do, after they sell, they stay on with the acquiring company for a bit of time. It sounds like you did for a few years. But then you quit to pursue quote unquote personal interest. But eventually in your words, the excitement of making a deal kind of lured you back into business. But for round two, you actually came back as a lawyer. So after getting your law degree, you started Argent Place Law to handle business law, IP law, and succession planning for business owners and entrepreneurs. You obviously have such a passion for working with small business owners and, you know, both in the professional capacity. And oftentimes I also understand that you do a lot of volunteer work because you really care about seeing business owners succeed. And that passion comes through every time I hear you speak. And I did hear you speak kind of most recently at your local BNI chapter. And so Savannah and I are really excited to have you here as our first guest to the podcast. Can't wait to dive into today's topic with you and all that it will bring on for us today. So
that's all correct and very well done. I don't know where you got all the information, but it's particularly accurate. The part that I like the best is how I came back as. It's almost like I died and then I came back to life as a lawyer. Some people would say the opposite happened. But anyway, I'm glad to be here. You gals are doing a great job.
Thank you. So why don't you tell us in your words about yourself and what makes you an authority on business plans?
I never thought of myself as an authority on business plans, but of course I've grown two companies. One of them I sold, as Tiffany said, a software company years ago. I'm in the middle of growing a law firm. And I've had business plans, and like most people, you know, the first ones I did, I wrote them and threw them in the drawer, never looked at them again. But I consult with a lot of different clients and I see the importance of a business plan. And I've seen a lot of them. So I have lots of opinions. Whether or not I'm an authority, I don't know. I'm definitely opinionated. There are people I know you can hire to actually help you write a business plan to get funded. I'm more interested in working with people using their business plans internally to make sure that they're more successful.
Mm. Oh, that's actually a great way to look at it. What are some questions you think a business should be asking themselves when they're writing out a business plan?
You know, so I read a lot of business books, and one of the ones that had the biggest influence on me is Simon Sinek's book called Start With Why.
Start With Why.
So, you know, I don't think you can build a successful company unless you have a why, in the sense of what Sinek says. So the first question that you should be a business owner should be asking yourself is, why am I starting this business? And there's actually two answers. There's the internal answer, and the vast majority of people I talk to are starting a business because they want control over their lives, right? Mm-hmm. Or they want to make more money.
Control their time.
Control of their time and make more money. And bring their ideas. You know, they feel like their ideas aren't being taken into account in their other job. But that is internal. And I have to tell you that if you publish that as the why you started your business, nobody cares. So the other part of your why is the why that you publish from the point of view of your customer, that you want to attract your customer. I think Tiffany said that perfectly when you were discussing what you learned at that recent networking event. You know, ask yourself the question, why would your customer even want to buy from you? And there's a lot behind that. And so I think that's the first thing you start with when you start your business plan.
Yeah, that is true.
The thing is, people get so attached to the personal side of it. I wonder if they even go down that route deep enough, because, you know, they would take almost personal offense to the fact that this grand idea they came up with, I mean, ultimately the truth is, yeah, nobody cares. They want to buy from you, right? So
that might happen.
Are you going to really meet that goal of being able to achieve the freedom of money and time with what you have? Or are you going to be, are you going to be big enough to be able to pivot from your own idea and be agile? And be able to come up with a new idea maybe to kind of pursue for your business idea versus the ones that you're personally attached to.
I thought that yesterday they brought up a fantastic example of when you say your why, like, let's say you have a clothing store and you're like, oh, well, I don't have, or no, he said, like a high-end store, whatever it was, a watch store, let's say. And, you know, I don't have any competition. So, you know, the why is, why not? And it was like, no, you actually do have competition, because there's a Louis Vuitton store next to you. If a gentleman has the opportunity to spend either $3,000 on a handbag or $3,000 on one of your watches, that's your competition. You know, the competition isn't always somebody in your field. It's more about the why should they come to you, as opposed to going to the person next door to you is your competition. So that's the kind of why question you need to answer. What kind of experience are you going to give them? So would you say that a business plan is static, should be static, or should it change? And when or how often do you suggest a business plan be updated?
So we're just talking in the middle of talking about that. You start with a why, and why your business, you try to promote your business. And it turns out that nobody cares. Nobody wants that, or there's not enough market for it, or you can't seem to make any traction. So you pivot. Change your business plan. Can't be static. All kinds of factors could affect you. They might be economic factors, they might be personal factors, markets change, people change. So how often? So the main thing is that you need to be looking at your business plan. It's a plan after all. You have a destination in mind. You want to be successful, you want to sell so many units, you want to be able to make so much money, and so that's your goal, and you're on a path, and you have to periodically check it, whether or not the path you're on is the right one, or you need to make a detour. So I won't say that there's any specific frequency with which you have to change your plan, but you might have to, once you're reviewing it, at least monthly, you would say, okay, I need to, my plan, focuses me onto certain tasks. And you might say, I need to change those tasks in order to get where I want to go. It's sort of a deviation of the route. So I would say, look at it monthly. You just make a commitment that you at least read through it monthly to make sure you're on the right path.
Remind yourself why you're doing this.
Right. Why and what the path you're on. A plan is strategic in nature. It's like high level, but it should guide you to specific tasks, milestones along the way.
So I want to pick your brain about that a little bit, just with your experience of the owners you've spoken to, right? Like, you know, how do you balance between like how long do you try for? Like what kind of framework would you say might work for somebody to be able to ask themselves, like, I'm either going down the wrong road or I'm not being persistent enough, right? Like, what's the balance there? Especially if you're a new business owner, sometimes you don't know, right? Sometimes you go online and hear all these motivational videos about grit and perseverance and how you just need to break through and stick with it and stick with it in the long run. But how do you know if you're sticking with the wrong business plan?
Yeah.
And I don't, that's a really great question. And I don't know that there's any specific answer to that. There are plenty of people that have come to mind in the examples. I don't want to name them, but there are people who they just trudge along literally for years before they get any traction. I would get like scared and bored if I was getting no traction whatsoever, but it depends on, you know, how much rejection you can take. I'd say, you know, you're reviewing your plan monthly, and then every 6 months you say, is it time to pivot? 6 months is a good time to, if you're actually trying to push this down the path and it seems like you're not getting anywhere and that roadblock continues to be in your way and you can't overcome it, 6 months is a pretty long time, I think, in order to say, do I want to stick with it after that? But you know, really, this is I think the answer is personal. Some people might say, I believe in this so much, I just need to keep pursuing it until people start buying it. I don't like L. Ron Hubbard. I don't believe in his philosophy, but he's an example of that guy.
The
things I read about him, he literally drove around the country with his books in his trunk of his car for years. I that's amazing persistence.
And that's the thing, is I think a lot of people kind of hang up their hats on that. Like, they hear the one or two success stories of people who have held on for so long and then made it big. But I find sometimes, like, if we step back into just like the grander scheme of things, you know, how much percentage do they really represent of everybody who's starting a new business, right? It's probably a very small percentage. Not to say that persistence is a good thing and you can't make it happen, but to persist for years and then finally hit it, I feel like that's a little bit of a unicorn in any industry.
I think it's also important to take into consideration the time of the generation of that time. Because could you do that in today's life, in today's world? I don't know that you could. Could you have done it in the 40s or 50s? Of course you could have. Like, you could even look at someone like Ray Koch, who like, he held on. Talk about a holder, someone who held on and pivoted and pivoted and pivoted and pivoted until he found the right thing with McDonald's. So it could have been done then, but I don't know that it could really be done in today's world. So that's something that you also have to take into consideration if you're going to hold certain people's paths as the path that you want to aspire to. Think about what the world looked like at that time as well. And does it pertain to the world? Is it parallel to what we have right now? So that's just my two cents. I do also want to know, though, when you say pivot, if in 6 months pivoting, like, I'd like for you to be a little more, describe a little bit more for our listeners as far as what type of pivoting you're talking about. Can you go a little more into detail about that? Because I don't want people to be like, I guess owning a clothing store is not my deal, not my jam. 6 months later, I'm going to be a jam dealer. Maybe not. Jellies are not my thing. Maybe I should be doing this thing, you know? So what type of pivoting are you talking about?
Well, I think there's two kinds. There's the product or service that you want to offer, and then there's your target customer. So maybe only one of those is wrong. Maybe you have a great product, but you're trying to sell it to the wrong people. Or maybe the people would be receptive, but they don't like the product. So pivoting would I think first is, if you think you like your product and you think that there's a market for it, find the right customer. So you might be trying to sell to you want to sell clothing, and you just aren't, you can't figure out a way to make it cheap enough for the lower end market. You're trying because you want to sell volume that's important to you for whatever reason, but you can't seem to make it there. Maybe you, you're really better at a higher end designs and selling for more money. You're still making, you know, clothing, but you're doing it for a different market. I think that's probably the biggest kind of the pivot to try them first, is making sure that you have the right market. And markets might involve different kinds of demographics. It might be something that sells in Washington, D.C. may not sell in Raleigh or in Baltimore.
And the
other way around, of course. So there, and then there's age groups, et cetera. So think very, very carefully about your target market. What, describe what your customer would be.
I completely agree with that. So how involved or detailed would you say a business plan should be? Like how many pages, how much information should be in it?
Yeah. So I want to answer that question in a little bit different way. It's not so much how long it is. I don't like long business plans, and there are people that talk about, I think you read books that say the one-page plan. I think more important is I'm not a fan of the outline for typical business plans. You know, it has, I don't even want to go into what the typical outline is because you can find it anywhere. So what I like to do is a business plan that starts at a strategic level. When you ask why, I mean, that's the most strategic level of all, but then also defining customers, et cetera. And it focuses you down to actual tasks. So I like to think, I mean, just doing this off the top of my head, so there might, I might miss an element, but we're talking about starting with why, describe your customer, describe your goals, describe the path to those goals. What's the message that you're using with your customers along the way? And I'm getting narrower and narrower here. Then I have key performance indicators, and the key performance indicators are going to point me to, I mean, key performance indicators for people who might not be aware, I think of them as milestones, how I'm keeping track of what steps along the way, how many leads am I generating, how many, what's my sales conversion rate, what's my revenue, et cetera. So they're going to be key KPIs. And then you get down to what are the specific tasks that I need to be involved in the next week, day, week, month. And it might be, I need to go to X number networking events, or I need to be able to post so many things on social media, or, you know, there are a bunch of marketing things that need to be done. I need to hire certain people, whatever it is. So I think of a business plan as starting high level and then focusing you down to specific tasks you want to work on. Now, the question you were asking is, how long does it need to be? It needs to be as long as necessary to get you to the tasks you need to be working on today.
So I like that. So there's no actual format, you're saying. There's not like a one-size-fit-all format, right? There's more of like a guideline for you to follow.
It's, this is what I'm telling you now is what I, the, what I follow with my clients, my advisory clients. It's different if you're trying to develop a plan for a consumption by a venture capitalist. You'll, I think that's totally different. Okay.
Those
plans that you're going to get used to get funded, they're going to have financial projections in them. They're going to have an analysis of the competition in detail. They're going to, what's, there's a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I don't even like the focusing on threats and weaknesses. I just want to know what the opportunities are and what strengths I want to capitalize on. So I don't even like SWOT analysis, but you'll put that into a business plan that you give to a venture capitalist.
So that's a good distinction that you're making, is the fact that I think a lot of times when people think business plan, I think they do get confused with the business plan, like you're saying, that you would offer to a venture capitalist or to maybe an investor, versus a business plan that is kind of your personal North Star that kind of helps you stay true to your path. That can be a very different outlook than what is kind of formalized and commonly accepted in more, more like within like the finance industry, I guess you can say.
Right.
Yeah, I love that. So tell me, and the the lifespan of a business, what point should a business owner start writing their business plan? At the beginning, before they start, after they've been in business for a while, like what, where do you think it's important to start?
Well, you should have some high level idea of where you want to go. Mm-hmm. I believe that everybody should have an LLC in their hip pocket. It should be just ready to go. You have the company all set up and ready to go, and it can accept revenue at a moment's notice. And you're out there kind of peddling stuff. Mm-hmm. And your plan is, I have these five ideas. Two of them are really easy, but I'm more interested in the other three. I'm just going to, go to networking events. I'm going to bring these up. You don't really have a plan. I mean, your plan is basically see what sticks. I'm throwing a bunch of spaghetti against the wall, see what sticks. At some point, you're going to start getting maybe a little traction, or you're going to be so enamored with this one of your ideas that that's the one you want to pursue. And that's the one that one or two, say no more than three, I would say that's a lot of diversion, but it is one or two that you're going to focus on. And that's when you need to create a plan for the how to attack those.
Okay, so if a company wanted to, or a business owner wanted to start a business plan, they have the ideas, but they don't have all the answers to the questions that they should have the answers to in a business plan. Do you recommend that the company move forward anyway and just answer as they go along, or should they have those answers to those questions before they move forward?
Yeah, I think the answers are fluid. I think you learn as you go. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to find out that this market is not what you thought it was, et cetera. So the answers you gave at the beginning are going to change 6 months later. So go. Do not spend too much time analyzing. Yeah. I have to say to you that I'm talking to myself here, because I get paralysis by an overanalysis. I do that myself. And I don't want my clients doing that. I want to say, go for something and see what happens.
My own rule of thumb is like, and I do the same thing, which is why I cut myself off as in, look, if I'm about 65, 70%, like feel like I'm ready, it's time to go and do, right? Because otherwise I could go for 100% and then I'll, you know, forever spend planning myself out and not actually doing anything. Because you learn so much by doing. A lot of what makes sense in your head and ideas that made sense maybe even on paper, it doesn't match up with reality when you go out there, right? Like when you go out and you actually do and then fall flat on your face and you go, oh, wow, that sounded like a great idea at the time, but yeah, nope, got to go back to the drawing board. Let's do this again. You get to kind of go through those iterations a lot quicker, the versions of your business plan a lot quicker than it is you sitting with one and trying to get that one perfect before you just do.
Yeah, but I am a proponent of writing it down. If you're out there mixing things up and you see that things are different than you thought they were, go back and write, you know, spend an hour adjusting the plan. It helps you focus on your goal and the path to get there.
Analysis paralysis. I love it.
You're saying basically throw spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah.
And after you do that, systematically decide what spaghetti you don't want to throw next time. And keep doing that, and eventually you'll figure out the right place to throw your spaghetti.
Yes, angel hair is best.
So. What type of spaghetti you should be throwing.
In the end, focus is what you need. So at the beginning, you don't know what thing to focus on, or you're not sure. I mean, or even if you are sure, you get confronted by reality. So you might have a broad approach at the beginning, but eventually you're going to come to, in order to make money. In order to make decent money, you're going to have to focus.
So I'll be curious to know, being that the law office you have now is kind of your second business. Did it take you a very long time to, focus the second time around?
No, I did have to make some pivots.
Okay.
But I don't even want to talk about what I really thought at the beginning this was going to be. But right now I am so happy that I focus on the legal needs of entrepreneurs. And it just turned out to be the right thing to do. It wasn't what I initially started out to be, but I really enjoy this.
And I see. Focuses. So you also started with a different idea, right? Kind of not through spaghetti and a wall. I think the wall was a lot smaller because you probably had a little bit more focus of what you wanted to do. But certainly it wasn't the exact plan that you have now.
Right.
I'm still stuck on that analysis paralysis part. I had met
still this, analyzing that.
No, it immediately made me think of this woman that I had met many years ago at a networking event, and she had gone to this networking event because she hadn't yet started a business, but she just wanted to like kind of get her feet wet, kind of see like what there was out there. And she and I happened to talk to each other, and she's like, I'm just so scared that I'm going to fail. And I said, oh, so you have, she said, no. And I said, well, then you've already, so you can only. And I said, not doing anything is failure in and of itself. You have to get yourself out there. Stop getting stuck in the vortex of how it's going to work. You're not going to know until you get out there. And that's why that what you said kind of took me directly back to her, because she just couldn't even move forward because she was stuck in that analysis paralysis. So I just wish I had that word back then. Anyway. Anyway, so in speaking of starting a business, my question kind of pertains more about like selling or merging a company. How important do you feel a business plan, or rather, how polished should a business plan be when selling or merging a company? How important of a component is a business plan and the overall sale or merger?
Yeah, so I've done quite a few deals as an attorney. I did one when I was a software, had a software company, one there. And then I've done many since then as an attorney. And I cannot remember a time that the business plan came up. What people do focus on is culture and seeing if there's a way, but culture and is there synergy. That's what happens in a merger or an acquisition. I don't think the business plan is going to be a part of that.
Interesting. So would you say then the policies and processes are important? Yes. Would you say those are more important when either selling or merging?
Definitely. I've talked to plenty of people who are saying buyers who are saying that's what they look for. They want to see processes in place that can make the target acquisition function without over involvement by the owners.
So in that case, if the business plan is so important, wouldn't writing out the policies and the processes be just as important when embarking on a new business, or, you know, in the, wouldn't it hold the same level of weight?
I don't think you know enough at the beginning to write out the processes. Policies is a little vaguer term. You do have to have like, what are your values? You should mention at the beginning, at the top of your business plan, what do you value in yourself and in your customers and your people, your employees or whatever. And what are your ethics? That's to the extent that those are policies, then yes. But as far as the processes used to get things done, I think you'll either be learning them and developing as you go, or if you buy a company in particular, if you buy a franchise, you're going to be buying policies and you're going to be buying processes.
But okay. I think it probably holds a lot of weight, I would imagine. And Michael, you can speak to this, is when you are the buyer, like you said, or if you're the one selling, is that, you know, there's a lot of value to having a process-led, process-driven company and how appealing that is typically to a buyer, right? Because a buyer wants to know that if I buy this and you exit as an owner, the business is not going to crumble in less than a year's time because everything kind of is centralized to you as the owner.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So are the necessities of a business plan the same in every industry, would you say, as far as like the larger points?
I think it's industry agnostic. Business plan is a kind of a roadmap to get from where you are to your goals. And so the idea of there being a business plan is central. I should think central. It should be central to every industry. And it's probably not even the elements that we've discussed, whether you're writing it up for an investor or you're writing up for internal consumption. You're going to be doing exactly this. You're going to put the same things into it, whether you're mm-hmm. in a technology company or a no-tech company.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I felt like I've learned so much. So now we're going to go a little into the point counterpoint, and I don't know, maybe we'll end up being point again. I don't know. Anyway,
okay. Michael will be here to break the tie.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, you know, for or against it, right? Like, I'm going to be the judge and say, you know, he's going to hold the crown this time.
Okay. All right. So the question is, should you take the time to write a business plan or concentrate more on processes and procedures in the beginning stages of your business?
I think I know who's going to win this one. Okay. So I'm probably
the owners are going to win, the people who are listening.
That's right. So, okay. My personal opinion is that, look, honestly, if you're a brand new business owner, much to like what Michael was saying, like, I feel like writing a business plan is more of an intellectual exercise than a practical one. I mean, you simply don't know enough, and you can go out there and read the best business books, but for you, it's all conceptual at this point.
Yeah.
You haven't done anything yet. Now, if you're your second company go around, or maybe your third, completely different story. But if you're just brand new and this is your first business, I just think that it's really hard to just start with a business plan before you go out. In fact, I mean, kind of contrary to what I was saying before, being 70% ready before you actually start, I myself feel like you may like just need to start, meaning that go out and sell your ideas, like sell your service, sell your product, and try to get some live feedback from those you talk to see if it's something that people even want, right? Now, it is the most nerve-wracking experience to do that as a first time. I remember when I first did it, I didn't spend much money because I didn't know like if this was going to work. So I printed out these really cheap, like, you know, 99 cents for like 100 cards at like Staples, right?
Yep.
Like 10 some years ago, just to have business cards, because otherwise it's weird at a networking event if you don't have something to give out. And it was like literally white card with like black letters on it with a name that I had randomly come up with. And I just went out there and tried my pitch and try to see if anybody would register when they like heard what I was saying. And it was a complete disaster, right? So I was selling, at first I was selling, I think when I was starting, I was selling just kind of like bookkeeping services, right?
Yeah.
But I made the mistake of mentioning, you know, three letters because I thought that that's what people wanted to hear. Meaning that I went out there and said, hey, I'm a CPA. I want to provide bookkeeping service. This is a good idea. Little did I know when people hear CPA, they think taxes. Like they have no concept of any other accounts or CPA doing any other service outside of taxes. And so at some point I had to give up on that and keep tweaking my like approach. And it probably took me like a good 6 to 8 months to even get something that I felt like was enough to stick with. But I think it taught me so much that it made me go back and refine like what my service is, what my package is, and then certainly how am I going to approach customers with what I'm selling to see if it's gonna be a viable business. And so that's why I'm a big component of just doing, just getting out there and do it. And then like, you know, then after that, once you start doing, and especially if you've never provided a service before, you kind of need to figure out how to do it. And so I would say it's probably like a good year into the business before you can actually put any process procedures down on paper. Otherwise, like, you can spend all your time putting the process procedures together and then just have to rip them up and do it again in a couple months when you decide to change how you want to do things because you realize how you ideally want to do it isn't the way to actually do it. It's not practical. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan of writing a business plan before starting a business.
Wait, did you just agree with me?
Maybe. This is our problem. Dang on it. Anyway, I do think you need a couple of years to get to know your business before you can answer at least most of the questions in a business plan. But then again, it also depends on what kind of business you're in. If it's a slow moving train, I think you can afford the time. But if it's not meant to be a slow moving train, maybe you need to answer those questions a little bit sooner, you know, because like I tried to write a business plan, but my brain just couldn't do it. I just couldn't wrap my mind around definitives because my personality is driven by being, you know, like kind of going with the flow. So it took me 2 years to start my company because I had analysis paralysis. I just didn't have the answers. And because I felt like I was supposed to have the answers before I started my company, it stressed me out considerably. You know, I had never really been in business for myself quite like this before. What I did before this company came to me from someone else's vision and someone else's experience. And I just generally just tagged along, or I tagged myself onto someone else's, or I branched out from someone else's idea. I hitched a ride, you know, whatever way you want to call it. When I had to create a company from scratch and it was by myself, I had to be the sole provider of the services, you know, I froze. I did, however, know what I didn't want my company to be. And I had very strong ideas about what I did want. So instead of a business plan, I created more of a business list, knowing what I would start with and knowing what I had 10 years from then. Would likely not be the same thing. And it actually was not on any level. What I started my company with and where I am at now are like very, very different. But I made a list of the things that I would never budge on. And you know what? I've still not budged on those. They're the core of who I am and the core of who my company is. I wanted a company that would complement the personal life and it wouldn't impinge on anyone else's personal life. I just didn't want to be that kind of boss. And I didn't want those kinds of clients. I didn't want to attract that kind of culture. I made a list of things that I would sway on depending on the mood of the area. We were in office at the time. And then after years of people just really not caring about us being in the office, we kind of went fully remote. And then the pandemic forced us. The pandemic made it okay for us to be fully remote. I offered admin and then I didn't. And then like almost immediately I did because people just really wanted it. I offered social media content, then I didn't. And, you know, I followed the flow of the needs of my audience. And then there were things I really didn't care about having an opinion on. Like I would let the majority rule, such as how I would market my company, how I would get clients, what kind of clients I would get. I never did niche. Like I was never really a niche kind of, I tried to niche and like a week later.
Okay, so we need counterpoint on that.
Let's counterpoint on that. I couldn't niche. I couldn't find my way to niche because I wanted to help all small businesses. And I didn't have an opinion on who we would work with and how they came to me. It was all organic and it still is. So I see the importance of a business plan, but I don't think you could really write one out before you embark on a business. And to speak to the niche, I didn't niche on industries, but I did. And I am now, once I started niching on pain points, that was more of what I niched on, is what they needed as opposed to where they were coming from, if you will.
So you niche in some aspects on the problem? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. I niched on the problem more so than niching on the industry.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I'm a big proponent for niching. I think it's really important. Like the niche also leads you to kind of understand what you want to be known for. And it's a lot, I feel like it's a lot easier and faster to grow a company if somebody can identify like what you're known for. Now, niching doesn't also mean that you're so far into that niche that you say no to everything else and anything else, right? I mean, I think there's a lot of good things about operating a company if you're niched from even an operational point of view, that you're not too scattered trying to do everything, right? So for example, like when I did when I had my outsourced accounting business, I niched down to just doing outsourced accounting. So I said no to taxes. I said no to outsourced CFO services. We focused on just back office accounting operations. And that was a very specific niche that I went after and also niched down on the clientele we're working with because the type of service we developed to only speak to a certain level a company is at, right? Whether it's revenue size or people size. And I felt, I think once I did that, one, it helped me scale a lot quicker, both internally and externally. Customers knew exactly who we are. They knew who to come find when they have a certain exact set of problems and what we can do about it. And it also helped me like train our people internally and onboard people, because I'm not trying to onboard them with like a whole bunch of different types of services. It's only a specific set of services. And so that helped me on both ends in that sense. And I feel like it also helped me when I was advertising to try to sell the company, because we were definable, right? And we, you know, and but then I kind of worked my way backwards, because when I did the plan finally, my business plan in the beginning, is I started with kind of the end game, right? I started with like the end in mind of I wanted to sell the company. Okay, well, if I'm going to sell the company, who are my buyers? Then I kind of worked my way backwards to figuring out, okay, what customers do I need to get? What kind of services was appealed to those customers to get the right revenue level, to get to the right buyer, to ultimately sell the company in however many years? So that's kind of like how I kind of did it backwards. And I think that's what made me kind of sit on the fact that niching is so important. And even in my second business, it's the same thing. You know, I kind of niched down pretty early on and said, I want to be known for this. Now, that being said, I was known for something that nobody cared to buy. So that was the first thing. I niched down on something that unfortunately the market did not respond to. So then I had to reel it back and be like, all right, you know, let's go back to the drawing board, ask the why questions again, figure out, all right, what do I want to do and be known for again, and then like pivot it so that the business now a year or so later is nothing like what I like, not that it's so far away, but it's not exactly the same thing I started with. So
yeah.
I feel like you're vulnerable to that regardless how many times you've been trying to do it.
No, that's true. I don't disagree with that. I think we thought we disagree, but we don't, because
I don't know, Mike, what do you think?
That's a great question. Like, what, how important is niching to defining your business plan? Is it important for you to be somewhat niched, or to have at least an idea of what your niche is, to be clearer on your business plan?
So when do I get to chime in?
You, that's what I'm asking you.
Well, that was a question for me.
That was a question for you. Yeah.
So you both said you don't want to start with a plan. You want to just go out there and do stuff. I don't know. I'm going to take the contrary approach.
Please counterpoint us, because we always try to counterpoint and we always end up agreeing with each other. So
yeah, I'm afraid that maybe this sounds like I'm giving the opposite opinion, but in reality, I believe that what you ended up saying is in agreement with what I'm about to say. you maybe don't want to spend the time and analyzing a whole bunch of stuff to answer a bunch of questions you think a business plan should have, and that's what you're focused on. But in reality, I think that what you're really saying is, I want to go out there and I want to go, this is my goal. I want to build a company that I could sell in a few years or some number of years. I want to build a company that addresses the needs of such and such a customer base. That is a goal. Okay, so now you've established that goal pretty early on. You know what your goal is going to be. And now what a plan is, simply, it's like plugging the end of your it's like plugging an address into Google Maps, and it gets spits back at you what the route is, and it gives you three options. One of them might be on the highway, some of the back roads, whatever. So you need to have step by step how you're going to get to that goal. So I'm a firm proponent of writing something down, and then 2, 3, 6 months later you can say, wow, I wrote that, oh my god, that was stupid. I mean, this is what I need to change. But constantly have a plan that shows you a path. Start down that path, and if it's not working, then you can make changes. But I think you should have a plan, and I think you should review it on a regular basis, not just wait. And if you constantly are waiting, I don't want to create a plan because I don't know what I'm doing. I think that's the opposite. He's like, I want to create a plan so that I do know what I'm doing, so I know what I should be working on today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. As far as the niche thing goes, totally believe in that. I think I mentioned it before. You know, niche is another way of saying focus. You have some kind of a focus. It might be the customer base. It might be the product area that you want to talk about. So just some personal experience. When I developed this software company with a partner. It was what's called image analysis software. We took pictures and we didn't treat it like art. We treated the pictures like data. And we tried to extract information from this. And we were certain that aerospace contractors are going to want this. And so we positioned ourselves to go to trade shows in which there were those kinds of people. They could not have cared less. They did not want to hear about this. Like, we had our own crap. But we found out that biologists wanted this stuff. Put a camera on their microscope and then take pictures and then analyze it. And so we just did a gigantic pivot to create the same. We had the same product in mind and we were developing. We just pivoted to a completely different market in which we were much more successful. Hmm. So those kinds of things just meant that we would go back and rewrite the business plan by focusing on a different client, not changing the product.
Mm-hmm. Now that's so true too.
Different because, niche.
Yeah. Like you kind of stay, you end up staying in the same lane. It's not like you're just completely changing lanes. Typically you're just pivoting within those lanes. So like, I mean, similar to what I was saying that I started last year with, like I didn't 100% change everything, but I did end up changing my messaging and my branding to be a little bit more clear as to what I was already doing.
Right? Yeah.
I had termed it something that nobody knew about, and it was just like, you know, trying to make fetch happen, and didn't happen at the end of the day.
Never gonna happen.
Yeah, exactly. Never gonna happen. But you know, as soon as I like changed the brand, I didn't change the core of what I was doing. Like the core was still pretty much the same. It was just how I was approaching the market and who resonated with it. And even when I was working to sell the last business, it was kind of the same thing. Like my customers kind of helped me dictate what my services were going to be, right? And how that was going to look, and made me go back and rewrite my plan. Now, I will say that I think, I don't know if you meant this, Michael, when you said write down your plan. What I heard was pen, paper, write plan, like not laptop, type plan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't handwrite anything. I can't even read what I wrote if I tried that. I'm talking about typing it in.
Oh, I'm old school. I have my notebook that I carry around. I write things down. And I was going to say that, you know, since the beginning, you know, I think the initial plan for most people to start is in their head is they throw spaghetti at the wall, right? I mean, that stuff is a plan. I just think that after that, you have to systematically kind of, you know, focus down like what Michael was saying. And I write it down on paper and then I go back and revisit it and then rewrite it and then like cross it out and redo it, because I'm a visual person to do that. And I find that that's super helpful. And then I also find that, like, from saying that, I think Michael won because we're all agreeing with him at this point, because I'm like, that's right, that is what I do, darn.
I know. This is now my goal. My goal is for us to disagree on something. I just want us to disagree.
We can't like each other that much to be that similar.
I know. But you're not wrong. So I want to kind of expand a little on what I was saying is that I didn't want a niche on a market, because I felt like I kept being told over the years that, what do you mean you all work with all small businesses? And I was like, but I do work with all small businesses. And, you know, in the networking world, they want you to narrow it down so that they can think of someone to refer to you, right? Like if you say, I only service the trades industry, I only service the whatever. So I did start doing that. I did start saying, oh, well, I work best with the trades industry. Well, it turned out we don't really work well with the trades industry, because so many of the people that I was working with were totally fine with sustaining. They weren't interested in growing their businesses. And it wasn't until after the pandemic that I realized, okay, well, let me take a look, because I had the time on my hands. Let me take a look at all of my clients and what industry they are in. And I found, surprisingly, that most of my biggest clients were either government contractors, restaurants, or, you know, other brick and mortar, rather brick and mortars, government contractors, brick and mortars, nonprofits, and other companies that had the similar pain point, which was they had come to us when they had a growth complex. They couldn't grow because they had so much that they had been ignoring. They had been moving forward. And now they hit the big time. And oh my gosh, my books are a mess. My office is a mess. My HR is a mess. I have nobody doing payroll. Now I have to do payroll. You know, like, so I found that growth management was my niche. So it was the what for them that became my niche. And once I figured out what my niche was, as far as growth management, literally everything, training people, writing my processes, everything was like fluid, super fluid. And my business plan, my goals, my everything became super fluid. So it was more of really truly defining not just my why, but my how, that really had me soaring, if you will. So
it sounds like your niche found you.
Yes, my niche found
Your niche kind of found you, right? It was just sitting there waiting for you to discover it. But yeah, you ended up like niching in a way you just didn't realize. And then once you did, now you can kind of like build your business around it. And that's why I think things become easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can tell once you hit a point where things, like, it clicks, everything just kind of clicks.
Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, I don't know what the words are to the song, but it's one of my favorite songs. It's something like, I haven't heard in a while. That's why I don't remember the words, but it was something like, I've been to the ruins of Italy, but I've never been to me. So it was kind of like that. Like, I've always been forward focused. And then it was like, let me ask myself these questions, you know? So, and once you start asking yourself those questions, it's like, oh, actually, that's not really where my focus is on. This is what my focus is on. So anyway, so this brings us to the raw truth. We're going to get into the raw truth where we share our own gritty experiences with today's topic. We want you listeners to know that success isn't easy. It's not pretty, and it's certainly not a straight line. We hope you will hear our cautionary tales and, you know, maybe you'll learn from them. So
Okay, so Michael's new to us, right? So we'll leave his raw truth last so that we can, like, can see what we're doing. But I think some of us, at least I did. I feel like I spilled a little bit of the raw truth already.
I know.
Which is basically starting with the end game in mind, starting at the end in mind and working our way backwards, right? I just felt like, it took me 4 years to get to that point. And then after that, the realization helped everything go a little faster. But I still feel like in those 4 years, I'm like, okay, I could have gotten here a little faster if I started with the end in mind and then building my plan around that. And I just kind of wish I didn't spend so much time, although maybe I was meant to learn this lessons and I had to go through it. But I felt like I spent a lot of time kind of going around in circles, trying to figure out what fit. And to Michael's point, I think maybe because I'd never really formalized an actual plan, where it formalized in the sense of like being like systematically going back, right? Writing the plan, trying it for a period of time, then going back and then being scientific about it, right? Having like hypothesis, trying it, doesn't work, change it again, try it again. I don't think I was very that consistent my first 4 years. And so I think it just took me a really long time to make this realization that I could have gotten to a little bit earlier. In that life, that lifespan, right? But I will tell you the one thing, I think to Michael's point too, is the fact that, first of all, we're not talking about a business plan that you're going to hand in to like an investor or anything like that, right? So this is your own plan for your own management purposes.
For your own goals.
Exactly. Like, I do believe that you have to, it looks whatever way you need it to look, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go through the same elements. I feel like you still got to think about who's your customers, what's your pricing, what's your competitor, you know, all that stuff. I just think that it's okay if it just looks different. It doesn't have to be, because I feel like there's a lot of things out there that says, oh, your business plan must look like this and you must hit every single one of these elements. And that's probably why you end up with like a 20-page business plan, because
it's
just a lot of elements you need to think about.
Yeah.
But, I just don't subscribe to that. And I still don't subscribe to it unless someone proves me otherwise that, you know, I'm not going to lie. My business plan has, you know, some arts and drawings and circles and stuff like that, like mind mapping and stuff like that all over the place, right? This is the way mine looks, and I'm going to stick to it until, you know, like I said, somebody proves me otherwise. It's not the way to do it. But I have learned a discipline now. This time around and even before is, you know, be scientific about it and, you know, go back and make sure you update and make sure you're still in alignment with where your why is and whether or not what you're trying to do today is actually going to point you to the why, and everything you're doing is actually getting you to that place, right? Instead of being distracted by a shiny object, which I'm certainly capable of.
Oh my God.
Distracted by.
Ridiculous.
I'm serious, right?
Squirrel.
That's the thing. Like, I'm with you, Michael. I see everything as an opportunity, which is so terrible at times, because everything could be such a good opportunity if you really focus on it. So it's kind of like a good and a bad thing to have that mindset. But then, you know, trying to rein yourself in. You got to figure out how to discipline yourself so you don't go off following something, yeah, and running in the wrong direction.
Yeah. And I think that I might be Michael's worst nightmare as far as a person with a business plan. I don't know, because even though I gave my raw truth during our counterpoint, I didn't know a whole lot about the corporate world. I came from sales, and I had been in sales for most of my life. I know it's hard to believe, but I've worked in sales since I was 11 years old. And not just sales. I worked in jewelry because I worked for family. And then when I didn't work for family, I worked for family friends. So I sold jewelry, and I sold jewelry in Detroit. So I had a different market that I spoke to, and it was in Michigan, so it was a different culture than it is here. So when I moved here, I didn't know anything about this area's communication culture. And it took me a couple of years, three to be exact, for me to really truly understand what the culture was here, people's expectations, unspoken culture, if you will. I learned that real estate's really expensive, part of the reason why so many people share spaces and or work in their basement. I learned that people want things done yesterday, but they're not going to tell you that. They're going to say whenever you have time, which really means yesterday. And in Michigan, it means next Friday's fine. So it took me a lot longer. It took me a lot longer than most to recognize who my company was and is. And I will say that I did take a communication course and a public speaking course to kind of freshen up how I spoke and to make sure that I used the right words and the right tone when I started my company. So I did make that investment in myself. Also, I had a family to rear, and that alone takes a lot of time. I've mentioned it before, but I got pregnant a couple of months after having started my company with our third child. And I did waste a lot of my time doing things that I thought were the right thing to do and really weren't. And to give myself an okay, I always say it's because my attention was so divided that I couldn't fully focus on what was right and what wasn't. I stand by not writing a business plan until you've been in business a couple of years, or maybe even just for a short period of time. But in my case, I never did write one until like much later on. But that also took me twice as long to see the success that I could have seen much sooner. So what about you, Michael?
Okay, so I'm going to bring up something I hadn't talked about before, but it took me a long time to realize the value of vision, mission, values, and ethics. Those things are so important that I'm disappointed that I didn't realize how important they were for a very long period of my working career. You need to have a grounding. I think I needed to have more grounding. I appreciate what Tiffany said about being attracted to the shiny object. Like, oh, it's really exciting. I have so many ideas. They would all be fantastic. But if you're grounded by a vision and then the mission for your company and create a value system and have some ethical base, I feel like I could get much farther, and I'm helping my clients get much farther because of that. So I really encourage people to think seriously about reading as many business books as you can. I listen to them all the time. And that's the thing that has stuck out to me. Start with why, which is basically the vision, and then make sure you have a mission for your company, and you have a value structure that you impose on yourself, on your employees, and on your suppliers, and even on your customers. And then finally, mm-hmm. make sure that you stay true to some ethical standards that you create for yourself.
Oh, that's so good. I remember when I had employees, one of the things we created was our company principles together. Mm-hmm. And that really helped. I think it helped align everybody. It helped them kind of think through what they're there for and how they want to approach work. And they felt like it was included. But same to you, Mike. I mean, like, part of me felt like a lot of the stuff he heard about is all fluff and just, great to sell a book. Yeah. But then there is some merit. There's actually a lot of merit to it. In practice and in reality. So, yeah.
So I just want to mention one other thing about that. I think everybody has some understanding of what vision and mission are. Values and ethics, they seem kind of the same. I spent some time researching this, and the value system is like, what is important to you? What are the things that you value? What are the things that guide you and what you want to work on? And ethics are more restrictive. Like lots of opportunities can come up or situations can come up and you should be restricted from certain actions based on your ethical
opinions. I like that.
That's a good way to put
One guides you outward, and the other one guides you inward.
Gets you back.
Yeah, so basically like who you would work with or what you would do, and then what you wouldn't do or who you wouldn't work with.
Yeah.
Gotcha. No, I like that because it helps with your vision. I think it helps make it clearer what your path is going to look like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you so much, Michael.
Well, it's been great interacting with you. That's been awesome. I really appreciate being the first one that you interviewed like this.
Michael, do you want to, is there any kind of contact information or anything you want to share? We can drop it in the notes later.
Yeah.
So the name of the law firm is Argent Place Law, A-R-G-E-N-T, which is the French word for money. It was a Latin word for money, too. So Argent is French for money. You can think of Argentina. It's the money country. So Argent Place Law. And so if you go to argentplacelaw.com, oh, why is place? Because I thought of this is the place you want to be around the money. So argentplacelaw.com, and you can make an appointment with me, 30-minute consultation, for initial consultation is free. But there's also a lot of resources there, talked about various legal principles on the blog that people can take advantage of.
Yeah, I was going to say that your blogs and your writings are very, like, very practical, like for sure. Specific things that people thought of, asked of very commonly. So it's definitely a place to check out if you want to get a lot of, like, resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll put some of your information on our show notes as well, so that our listeners can reach out to you or, you know, answer more questions, and hopefully, you know, you can help them out.
Well, great. Thanks so much. I will bow out, and I think you guys are continuing on. I appreciate you inviting me. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Bye now.
All right, so we are going to move on to our famous example. Yeah. So in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history. And sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion.
Okay. So I think my example goes back to us kind of talking about how business plans are a living document and that businesses pivot and change all the time. And so like Michael was saying, you may be still in the same lane, but you'll probably be pivoting quite a few. And my famous example today is actually Instagram, where Instagram didn't start out as Instagram. It started as something called Bourbon, B-U-R-B-N. And that's right. Oh. Like the whiskey.
Oh.
Kentucky whiskey, Bourbon. The one of the founders, Kevin Systrom, he was a big fan of Kentucky whiskey. So when he created this application, he named it Bourbon. And what it started out as was actually a location-based iPhone app, kind of like, what was that thing back in the day, Foursquare or whatever it was called?
Yeah.
So it's a peep. You know, named this stuff after booze.
Where to find the booze.
Find the booze, right? So in this case, because it's an application or not, it was actually complicated for them to build. So it did take them a few months to build it out. And essentially, it was a little bit similar like Foursquare. I think it may have been around the same time. But basically, it lets like users check in a particular area, make plans for like future check-ins, earn points for hanging out with friends, posting pictures on Meetup. I mean, I never use Foursquare, so I don't really know exactly what that entailed. But kind of get the social aspect of Bourbon and what they were going on for.
Yeah. Right?
So obviously, you know the ending of the story. So, of course, Bourbon was not very successful at all.
I imagine not.
Yeah, he himself even said that the app was way too complicated and it was a jumble of features and it was just super confusing. So it just didn't do well. But then you know, because he had an application out there, he was able to get some data from like how people were using, interacting it. And then he also brought on another programmer. His name was Mike Krieger. And the two of them kind of used analytics to determine like kind of what their customers were doing with their app. And because why did they come back if it was such a terrible app, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And it turned out they were actually coming
up. A bunch of alcoholics just kind of walking around.
Just in bars, right? Accidentally, you know, instead of dialing, they're accidentally opening up the app. So they found out that instead of actually using the check-in features that Bourbon had, which is what the app was all about, they were actually using the app's photo sharing features. So they were basically posting and sharing photos like crazy. So, like I said, we all know how this turns out. So they were smart. So I feel like they kind of did a little bit like very similar to what you were saying, Savannah, where you kind of like stepped back, took a look at your customer and was like, what are they doing? What do they like? And so they found out the answer and they decided to double down on this. And so they focused on the photo sharing app. And basically, I mean, clearly with Instagram today, as we see it, you know, the rest of Bourbon kind of went out the window, right?
Clearly, oh, for sure.
It wasn't a thing anymore. So they basically niched down on just a simple photo sharing application. And eventually they also added filters and stuff. And that was also like, if I remember, there was some interview they were on, I heard about this, and that was also by accidental design that they added the filters, because they were having some conversation and some people, somebody, either Kevin's wife or somebody's wife was saying like, oh, like, you know, like, yeah, so-and-so takes great pictures. It'd be great if I could just take great pictures like that, like professionally made pictures or something like that, right?
Huh.
Same. And they came on this idea of filters. And so that's kind of how they ended up adding filters.
That is so cool.
To their app. And of course, you know, after months of like kind of playing around with this and whatnot, they renamed the app to Instagram instead of Bourbon. So the founder himself said, like in a conference quite a few years ago, he was just explaining what was happening. He said, you know, it's really about going through false starts, right? Bourbon was a false start, right? The best companies in the world all have had predecessors. YouTube started out as a dating site. You always have to evolve into something else. So I thought that was a very pointed story to demonstrate all the points we happen to be making today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's funny because I don't know what made me think of this. Maybe I'm just showing my age, but it reminds me of when people used to record. They would sit in like in front of a camera and like record about themselves. Like I like long walks on a beach, and they would put it on a VCR tape, and then you would have to like put the VCR tape and like watch it and be like, I think I like the one that was at, I don't know, 3 minutes and 55 seconds.
That was I think that was the very first iteration of dating apps.
The first iteration of swipe left, swipe
right. Yeah, yeah. Except you just had to go into the facility to swipe left or right. So,
gosh, oh my God.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know what made me think of that. But anyway, one of my favorite billionaires, because I have so many to choose from, is Richard Branson. He wrote his first business plan at 15 years of age when he started a student magazine. Branson has said, it's amazing how your ideas can take flight so long as you write them down and share them with others. And as you can see from my story, a business plan doesn't have to be a lengthy, well thought out proposal. It can be as simple as some notes in a notebook or a scribble in the back of an envelope. So that kind of speaks to what Michael was saying too. Just write it down, whatever it is. And what you were saying before too, like it might not be pretty, but it's there, it's written. Mm-hmm. According to NBC's Make It website, the idea had been championed by other billionaire entrepreneurs like Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg and LinkedIn co-founder Reid Hoffman. If I had to understand everything about connecting people before I began, I would never have started Facebook, Zuckerberg said in his commencement speech to Harvard graduates. Zuckerberg was a teen hacker, and he carried that mentality into launching Facebook. According to Hoffman, that's why Zuckerberg is so successful. He has no qualms about rushing out an imperfect product. In fact, his famous mantra is move fast and break things, says Hoffman about Zuckerberg on his podcast, Masters of Scale. If you are Steve Jobs, you can wait for your product to be perfect, but there are almost no Steve Jobs in the world. The link to that article will be in our show notes. So Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And that's one of the things about Richard Branson that I think I've always liked. And I inadvertently kind of follow the same idea. Like, you have your goal in mind. You have a pretty good sense of what it is you want to do. Just go ahead and do it and figure the rest out later. So we're going to move on to our books and tools and platforms. Because with each episode, we like to share either books, tools, apps, platforms, or anything we think is a great next step and connector to our discussion. So if you like our subject matter and you want to learn more, this is a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, we definitely will include Michael's recommendation, right? Simon Sinek's books in the show notes, and also include the YouTube, like the TED Talk that he did, like the YouTube TED Talk. That's how I came across him the first time. He did that, and of course, it's one of the viral TED Talks. You know, that probably helped launch everything else beyond that. But he's a great speaker. I mean, still does a lot of speaking things. So we're happy to put that in the show notes.
Yes,
I have a couple books, of course. So I feel like some long ways of getting around it, right? Like somehow, even if it wasn't written, it was certainly formulated that we all had some kind of business plan when before we went out in the world.
Yeah.
And while I agree that writing it down and systematically reviewing it is obviously my way of doing things now, but I didn't start out that way. And I can tell how, I can certainly remember and understand how impatient and naive I was as a first-time business owner to not know enough to do anything other than just start, right? And that's not a bad place, especially if you're new, because that actually puts you way ahead of everybody else. Because there are a lot of people, as sure our listeners will run into, and Savannah, you probably know, who are just idea makers and idea talkers, and that's all they do, and that's all they stay. And so the fact that you actually do will already put you leagues ahead of everybody else. So I'm a big proponent of doing. Now, for those who are trying, you know, hopefully listening to the episode, thinking on a business plan may be a good idea if it's not like actually formulated or actually formalized for yourself. I have a couple books to recommend. There's one that's called The Lean Business Planning Book by Tim Berry. The great thing is, you know, he's such a believer of this stuff that I'll put it in the show notes below. You can actually just read it for free. So you can download directly from his website, or you can get it on, I think, on Amazon Kindle Unlimited. If you have that subscription, that's basically like a free borrow for you. And so that kind of, you know, really condenses kind of how you want to plan for your business. And then the second book, which is kind of funny because I think Michael had mentioned this, is the one-page business plan that he wasn't a fan of. But I feel like I think having a plan is certainly better than no plan. And for anybody who feels like they can't sit down or focus long enough to have a detailed plan, like I said, at the end of the day, having one is better than not. So if it's just a one page one, then it's just a one page one. You know, start somewhere. And trust me, I think life will teach you a lesson to tell you it's a good idea later on the road, right?
For sure.
So the one page business plan is something that I would recommend. And last thing is, I think as all of us have said, and even in our famous examples, right? Business plans are live documents. It doesn't. What you wrote on day one is not what it's going to look like however many days down the road, right? Yeah. So it's supposed to change all the time. You are supposed to update it. You're supposed to pivot all the time. So don't get frustrated if you're one of those people who feels like you have to stick to a plan. Just know the plan will change and it's okay. And treat it more like a guide to kind of, you know, and then as a business owner, you just need to react and be agile and know that there's a lot of experimenting, a lot of learning along the way. Just make sure that you have fun while you're doing it. And also just expect that pivoting is just part of the game.
Yeah. And I think it's funny that like both of you are recommending business books. But for me, when I was kind of formulating my thoughts and my plans and whatnot, it wasn't business books that I was reading. I was just eating up Dr. Wayne Dyer. And
he's a good one.
So I wasn't so much, but that's also because of my background. Like everyone in my family owns a business. I came from a business focused family. I always worked for family, which was not, it's not unusual for an Armenian to do that. Right. So, I knew a lot about business and I knew a lot about how to run a business and I knew all of the things. And like my entire life, most of the kind of advice I was given, it wasn't like, you know, eat an apple once a day or brush your teeth twice a day. It wasn't that kind of stuff. It was more about like, there are four pillars of success. You know, like environment I was, yeah, exactly. That was the kind of environment I was.
You went searching. When you search for information, you were obviously looking for not so much how-to information. You seemed like looking for more mindset.
Yes, it was more mindset stuff that I was in. Yes. And the bigger world around me. And I needed to gain more courage in being okay with failure and being okay with not knowing the answers. That was more of what it was. So I think for a lot of people, and this might be good for some of our listeners, you might know exactly what kind of business you want to have, but it might be that the reason why you haven't pushed go on it yet is because your mindset. So take a second and think about what it is that you might be missing in your components. It might not be the business plan. It might be the mindset. It might be the courage. It might be, you know, whatever it may be.
It could be all of it.
All of it. It could be.
Doesn't mean you can't start. It's certainly
doable. Right. It takes me back again to that same person who had this perfect idea. She had formulated all of the things, but she just couldn't move forward. And I was like, well, you've already failed. So, I mean,
there you go. You're already starting.
Yeah. You're afraid of failure, but you're already failing. So I don't know what to say.
So you recommend Wayne Dyer or?
Yeah, I really liked reading the book. And I can't even recommend a book. I would say any.
He also has so many.
So many. So many I've read.
He's also all over YouTube. Like literally. You'll have some kind of his speech come up. And his speeches are great.
His family has done a great job of continuing his legacy after he passed away. I think he's one of like three famous people I cried over when they died. But, you know, they've done a great job of continuing his legacy and keeping his words alive. I don't think you can go wrong with any of his books. I think it really depends on where your mind is at the moment, where you are emotionally. So choose the book that sings to you, I guess. But to be more realistic direction of business plans in a more, I guess, tangible place, I did find a few tools, platforms that I think might be useful. And we'll have the link on the show notes that you can take a look at those. And there, a lot of the things that I found were suggestions from a website. So that link will have also other suggestions for you. The ones that stood out for me were the Business Planner and Live Plan. These are builders, business plan builders. If you really don't know where to start, if you're really having a hard time with like writer's block, I think these are two really good places to go. So the Business Planner features a single screen dashboard for reporting, and it has a campus edition for educators. This tool is free for startups, and it does have other scalable tiers to offer as well. So this is kind of more of your live, like your living, breathing document. This is a place where you can basically grow it digitally. Live Plan claims to build business plans 30% faster than its rivals. It features sample plans and professional documents, which could come in handy if you plan to elicit investors. Live Plan comes with two plans, standard and premium, and it charges start at $20 a month. And like I said, the website that I got the two of these on have other suggestions as well, and that will be on the show notes. So,
look at us.
Yeah, we're growing.
Thanks. First guest under our belt.
Yes.
And you guys, our listeners, you guys let us know if you enjoy that or not.
Yeah.
If you should do more of that. I you know, personally really enjoyed a lot of stuff that Michael was talking about. And I love his aspects of it. And certainly he has a lot of experience too.
Absolutely.
So it was great to just, you know, have another voice in the room besides us two.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like there's so much that we can share. There's only so much that we can share, right? We're not masters of the universe. Like, we know what we know. We know what we've...
We're still learning.
Right. And I think that, like, especially from even taking what the event that we went to yesterday, of which, like I said, we want to be able to go to more of these kinds of events to be able to bring more information, valuable information, and even speakers to you, our audience. So once we get that Patreon page up, we're going to let you guys know, and hopefully we'll be able to share more with you. But in saying that, the event that we went to yesterday was so eye-opening. There was a lot that I thought I knew, and then I realized there was a lot that I really did not know. You know, I think having one of those gentlemen on as a speaker for a future show would be fantastic, because some of our listeners might be wanting to, in 5 years, sell their business, or maybe they need an investor. And it's a great opportunity to kind of glean off of them what kind of information you need to know. So yeah, email us. You know, you can find us on Instagram as well. You can find us on Twitter. Send us messages. Whatever it is that you want to learn more about, please let us know, because we are going to offer what we think you should know, but there might be something that we haven't thought of before. So
that'll be a challenge.
Absolutely. I always am. So please join us for our next episode, where we will discuss, are you a people pleaser? How your personality can sink or soar your business. This is an important discussion, I think, because it forces us to look within, determine our personality type, and how to work with it, not against it. I will say that, you know, maybe some of you listeners are like, I don't really care about that people pleasing. Like, you guys are stretching it. But I know you, Tiffany, can agree with me that there have been times that we have come across business owners who need our help, but because they just can't get past their own personalities, we've come to find, I can't help you, man. I really can't. You got to get over yourself.
I always like to say, especially even with the business owners I'm working with, is, you know, when you go into business, whether you want it or not, business, being an owner, is going to put a mirror up to you, and you get to see yourself in HD, 4K, whatever you want to call it, real clear, the things that really work for you and the things that really works against you. And if you are not self-aware enough, this is going to be a long, hard journey, man.
For sure.
Not to say you can't be successful, but whether or not you are fulfilled in what you're doing.
That's and how you find that success, how quickly you find that success. So
taking up people pleasing characteristic traits next episode. So that should be a fun one. That should be an interesting one.
I'm really looking forward to getting down and dirty with that one. And hopefully I won't.
So if our listeners are people, like, no, even if you're a closeted people pleaser, okay, whatever, right? you know if you are, right? Yeah. But, you know, make sure you stay tuned for our next episode. And if you know people who are, make sure you get them to follow us so they can hear that episode, because it should be quite interesting.
And you might not even realize it. You might even, like, listen to it and halfway through the episode be like, wait, am I the drama?
There's no shame in that. We are who we are. We just need to make it work for what we want to do in life as a business owner. That's all it is.
Yeah. Totally. So please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links will be posted below. And until next time, mind the business behind your business, because all great successes start small. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.